Welcome back, kings, queens, everything in between. It's another episode of the Peasant Party Podcast. I am your host, Charlotte Warren, and it's going to be a fantastic episode today because I've got an incredible guest just to my right. Adine, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah.
I'll just pass it right over to you. Yeah.
Adine Vices Fitness, fitness creator, I guess, but full-time in-person trainer still. The fitness creator side is like secondary, I guess. It's been a pandemic or post-pandemic business venture, but yeah, so full-time in-person trainer, exercise scientist background, but also just like kind of a normal guy who does normal stuff and also does Instagram on the side.
Nice. I love that. And yeah, like, so yeah, full-time trainer, fitness content, Vices Fitness.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, okay. How did you kind of go did you start as like a trainer and then kind of start adding like content creation into the mix, or did the two kind of go hand in hand?
I was a full-time coach. Actually, my goal was to be a physical therapist at first. And then I had like a resume online for a PT assistant job to be able to get like hours so they can apply to DPT school. And Equinox, one of the companies I work for, was like, hey, they saw my resume. They're like, do you want to be a trainer? And like, I shouldn't say this on camera, but I will. When you're like a strength and conditioning coach, like being asked to be a trainer feels like a demotion. It's not at all, especially financially, it's not. But like, you just feel like you've gone through this education, like whatever. And I was 22 or 23 at the time, and I was like, I don't want to do that. And I'm just quickly Googled like how much they make. And I was like, oh, that's actually what DPTs make. Like, why don't I consider doing this? So then I got into training and I liked it a lot. The gym's great. The client base is great. I was planning on leaving within 6 months. This is back in 2015, and just doing like an app-based fitness thing. And I found some like early investors for it, kind of fell through, and probably a good thing I'm not the technical co-founder or founder that could actually like be the product lead. I just knew about the strength training side. So like years and years just go by and I'm with the company. Out of nowhere, the pandemic hits, and like my first like response there was Equinox was nice enough to pay us for the first few months. And so I studied for like a graduate school test, the GRE, so I could be able to do that, because there's, in my view, there's no other time where I'm gonna get paid in full to just sit at home for like a month or two. Took the test, got the score, actually got better than I wanted on the score. But instead of applying to school, I was like, wait a second, like I have this time still. If I just like use that same effort I just did to get the score I wanted on something else, like would I not get like better or more money sooner? And so I took a couple months off of like actually doing that kind of stuff on the side, started formulating an idea around what I wanted to do outside of my in-person job, because this is still prime pandemic. My business was shot by 70% because we're not going in person. I'm just sitting there laying around, and like one night I was like, me and my friends were all at the time 27. We're going out 3 to 4 nights a week before the pandemic. All my friends are in like sales, finance, all this kind of stuff. Former athletes for the most part. Healthy guys, work hard, play hard, 80-hour week type people. But like we went out like hard four nights a week. And I was like scrolling through social media and I was like, there's just like no one who has like the background that I have that talks about fitness and stuff in like a way that applies to me and my friends. And like I talk to them about it, but like they don't hear that from anyone that's like credible in the space. And so overnight I was like, that's an empty like gap in the market. Like I'm just going to go, if I have 20, 30, 40, 50 friends that would all listen to this, there's probably more of these people out there. But I was never going to go on camera ever. Like I was like, I'll write articles on the back end, like write quietly. No one will know who I am. And the Vices Fitness, while it works really great for this, actually works better, was originally a branding idea for a coffee shop lounge. I pitched a restaurant ownership company in Boston that was gonna be called Vices Coffee. It's gonna be like a 150 square foot, like window only app ordering coffee shop where the coffee is just the strongest black coffee you could get. Then at night you go through the coffee shop and there's a lounge in the back. And the idea was just like double dip income. And I had this like pink neon like logo that was like the neon turns on and when it's at lounge, but during the day it's not neon. I had these pink cups planned out and shit. Fell through again, similar to the original idea, like fortunate fell through. So when I formulated this social media article writing thing, I was like, you know, the branding I had for that is actually perfect for this. My sister's a graphic designer on the side of being a DJ, oddly enough.
Nice.
So she made me a logo. I start writing articles, and like, it's 2021 at this time. Like, no one's reading articles unless you're already like an established content creator or whatever. It's around December, and I was training this kid who used to own a social media company. And he was like, yeah, you got to get on video. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that. And this is around the time where like not a lot of people were either.
Yeah.
And so I listened to the kid. The kid's like a savant. He's probably going to hear this and get all gassed up, which he should. He's a savant.
Give him a shout out.
Yeah. Zach.
Shout out Zach.
Savant. And he's always ahead of the curve, just like always. You just know to listen to him. So he was like, just get on video. And then I was like, all right. So I started filming a little bit of me working out, but I wasn't comfortable talking. And it already starts to do better on TikTok and Instagram, of course. And I'm like, okay, get a little bit of a buzz, a little bit of a high off this. And then I just go to him and I'm like, hey, like, give me some more tips. He spends like 4 hours just scrolling through TikTok. And like, he just has that kind of brain where he can realize like what's doing well, like what's the formula for doing well. So he comes back the next time we work out together. He's like, you need a hook, you need subtitles, you need this, and it needs to be shorter. And you need to talk to the camera. First time I do it, I go from like 400 views a video to 4,700. And I was like, 10X. Like, hey, Zach, give me some more tips. We just kind of talk it out, what I could have done better, what I could have done like differently. Next one I do gets 37,000 views, and I'm like, holy shit, we just 10x twice in a matter of like days. And I do one 2 days later, first viral video I ever had. Early 2021, 2.1 million views, got 45,000 followers from one video on TikTok, and I was like, this is a job now.
Wait, what was the video?
It was, so to be fair, it went viral because I was accidentally misleading, and I'm glad I get to clear the record here. As an exercise scientist, and I'm friends with the people who called me out on this now, so I want to also add that in. As an exercise scientist, the term fat burn has a very specific meaning. It is you using fat as a fuel. And I'm under the assumption that kind of everyone knows that by now. Like, it's not 2001 where you hear fat burn like from HIIT, whatever. Like, I figured everyone knew this. So I did a video on like misconceptions around fat burn and exercise intensity, where I was like, look, people think you burn more fat the harder you work out. It's not true. It's actually at a low to moderate intensity. I layered in some jokes about the royal family being racist at one point there and some other stuff that made it go viral. But the crux of to why it went viral was people were like assuming I was talking about fat loss versus burn. And I didn't know that. And then I started getting some stitches and I was like, what did I get wrong? And these are straight stitches from very credible people I care about. And I'm like, oh no, I didn't realize like, as a science guy, I'm like, I don't want to be misleading or uncredible here. So I did a correction video on it like 2 days later that got like tens of thousands or whatever. So I got lucky that I was accidentally misleading and it didn't like cause like damage or anything. But had I like been perfectly clear in my language, like I don't think it would have gone viral and it wouldn't have kickstarted everything. So that was like April of 2021. And then from there, it's just been like a slow churn. And I think when you see like 3 years of growth on social media, people think that it's just like steady and it's just not. Like,
no.
There's like under 10 days that have me to where I'm at. Like these massive spikes and then nothing for months and then massive spikes and then nothing for months. And you're like, and everyone I know who's ahead of me in the industry, same thing. They know the exact video. They can name you the videos for the last few years that like really got them to pop. So it's been a slow churn. And now like each year I've launched a different product to get more and more of that to be my main business instead of in person. And then each year I just kind of like cut down my in-person workload. But similar to you, I'm not ready to like quit my day job for it. I like my day job too. I don't know if you do, but that's the long of it as to how I got here. But it's a fun job.
Oh, sure. And I really like, yeah, like you, it really resonated with me with just, like you said, Vices Fitness, people that like to go out, have fun and kind of have a life maybe outside fitness. Yeah. Like, cause I'm someone who's, you know, I would like to run like a half marathon early next year. You know, I ran cross country in high school, all of that, but you know, I've taken some kind of breaks in between, never really got into like strength training and have sort of started to try. But if you like look at most like fitness content that's out there, like it's so intimidating, like
so intimidating. You know,
abs are made in the kitchen, like don't be drinking alcohol, like don't do anything lame. Like that, like meal prep right now. And it's just like your whole life has to be fitness or you can't be here. And like, I think I'm not the only one who thinks that. Like, I know there's people that like are scared to go to the gym because they're just so terrified of like gym culture and looking like the weirdo who gets filmed for having bad form or something like that.
Oh yeah.
And I think I really like it when there's fitness creators, when they do like relatable stuff, you know, when they shut down these like guru types that are like,
oh, it's so fun. There's a bit of a negativity to that content. So I try and limit it a little bit, but like my general rule of thumb is like, don't punch down. So if the creator's like, you know, like smaller than you or whatever, like I'm not going to punch down. And also they have to be causing some degree of like harm where it's like, you're either putting innocent people's lives, not at stake, but like they are going to be worse off from this or they're financially worse off from it. Cause that's still harm when they're spending money on stuff they don't need to, or they're like my biggest pet peeve these days, because it takes a while of training to get to this stage. Anything that like causes unnecessary fear in someone is like my biggest pet peeve. I'm like, even if it was true, like even if they should be a little scared of like BPA or some shit, it's like, okay, but like we can't avoid everything. The last thing you want is more humans walking around just scared of everything. Like you want to try, if you're a coach, you care, like you want to try and make people feel like strong, like they have performance, they're confident, and they can walk around fearless, not like fearful. So anytime someone does something like to make people scared of stuff, I'm like, that's such a cheap way to get views. Like, it's easy to call out. But I think one of your earlier podcasts like resonated well with like kind of why I started the content in general. I think it was something about, you guys were talking about hiking, and you're like, there's no way all these people actually like hiking. And I'm like, yeah. I know. Like, my dad used to tell me all the time, he's like, why don't you and your friends go hike on the weekends instead of drink? I'm like, I can do that for the rest of my life. I'm in my 20s, well, now 32, but at the time I was in my 20s. I'm like, I'm in this now, and I'm like, yeah, I like hiking, but I like drinking with my friends more. And there's a lot of people who like doing that, and no one's catering to them, and no one's talking to them about how to like do that in a balanced way, in a safe way, how to just like reduce your hangovers, or like how to like, you know, compensate or plan for it, like nutrition wise, so that you can like have fun and still look the way you want or feel the way you want and perform the way you want at work. There's a huge gap in that market. It's either like be perfect or don't. And like, so it's so fucking annoying.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I think there's, I think a lot of fitness creators just like put this barrier to entry into fitness. It's not even real. It's like scaring people away from getting into fitness because they make it just so intimidating.
Yeah.
Like you have to give up this whole life and, you know, be this gym person. Yeah. And I really appreciate that, because I think it's all about balance. It's all about moderation.
Mm-hmm.
People make unhealthy choices when they drink too much alcohol, but also, you know, it's a social activity that brings people together.
100%. I mean, there's like, that's a part where I'm like, I would never go out and be like, me drinking with my friends is objectively physically healthy. Mm-hmm. But I could list you the indirect benefits it's had. Now, not everyone gets these benefits. Some people are like, alcohol is not for them. And if you're one of those, don't have it. Like, that's it.
Yep.
But for me, like, I'm definitely nicer when I have a few drinks. I'm definitely more outgoing when I have a few drinks. Like, that's kind of how I met my wife. That's how I met a lot of my good friends, that a lot of us invest and go into business together, at least talk about it more than do it. But we still at least like have plans to meet from, or work together in ways that are more productive than just going out. And we can objectively say we would have never met each other and never done these things if it wasn't for drinking. Now, not everyone gets that benefit. Like, if you're drinking a 12-pack at home and alone every single night, that's a very different experience than going Thursday, Friday, Saturday, even Sundays out with your friends. So it's added a lot more pros than cons. And I also knew from when I was like 18 that I'm like, it tapers. Like, naturally, when you get to like 30, 40, like, you're no longer going out. Like, we stopped going out four nights a week around the pandemic. Now it's like twice a month. And that was going to happen organically. Mm-hmm. But I still am like all for it. Like, it's great. It's some of the best time I have, being really hungover on a Sunday and just laying there and doing nothing and ordering Uber Eats like five times. Sometimes I'm not even that hungover where I need it. I just like that feeling. Yeah. I like just like after 6 days of working 80 hours, moving all day, like lifting weights and shit, like all that stuff. Like, I just want to lay on the couch and be fed really, really bad food for 12 hours straight and watch football. Like,
yep,
I love it. Live for it.
Oh, for sure. Like, yeah, love it. Uber Eats, or I'm sorry, DoorDash is like my guilty
like
pleasure.
Yeah,
it's just, I think I had like a subscription of it through like work or something.
Mm.
And it's just, it's nice because they kind of take routes that are kind of a pain in the ass to get to for my house.
Yeah.
Or it's like, there's somewhere it's like they go into the mall or something. I'm like, I'm not going into the mall to pick up. I love like Wetzel's pretzels. That sounds so dumb.
I've never had that before. Is it good?
So good. I love soft pretzels. I know. I just shared my very... like, I don't know what it is. They're just really good. And then, so you mentioned, you're recently married.
Yeah, May of this year. So now,
congratulations.
Oh shit, our 6 months is gonna be soon, I think.
Ooh.
Yeah, thank you. It was May 18th, so 6 months will be like what, 12 days, 11 days? Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
it's been fun. Wasn't like a huge change for us. I guess the bigger change for us, because she's a doctor now, and she was in med school before. It was more us moving together finally. Like, we lived together for periods during the pandemic. She was remote for school, so it wasn't weird to live together. Mm-hmm. But the actual getting married was not as big of a shift as like, she's moving to Boston for work. Now we live together, we have an apartment together, and that was a really fun. It's been like an awesome 6 months, a great adjustment to be like, hey, like, we both work a lot. You get home from night, and like, we just get to like hang out. Mm-hmm. And as we joke together, it's like, it's a sleepover every night. Like, you just get to have your best friend there like anytime you want. Sundays are like literally the thing that we live for. So it's been awesome so far. It could not be better.
Awesome. I love to hear that. And how'd you guys meet? Like, what's the meet cute story?
Well, so you're a social person.
Yep.
Are you in your 20s?
I'm 31.
31. Okay. Yeah. I'm 32 as well. So probably more back to like your mid 20s. Like, the longer story of it is, after I was a fraternity social chair in college.
Nice. Which one?
UConn and Sigma Chi.
Nice.
And,
okay, cool. Yeah, I was
big
KKG.
Party thrower. Nice. Oh, yeah. That was one of our top. Nice. Shout out to Kappa UConn, but that was one of our top houses as well. And so we were good friends with them, Alpha Phi and Delta Gamma. And So I was like the party planner for like 3 years straight. And then you get out of college, you're like, oh, we're just not going to do that kind of stuff ever again. And the first year or two, we were like socializing and going out, but like not really going out. And we started going out on Sundays to watch football. And like, it was different. Like, it was like kind of crazier than arguably even college. There was these bars, this one specific bar in South Boston, BBG, that like was the most mayhem I've ever seen at a bar. And I get there for the first time, like, who goes out on a Sunday? I have to wake up at 5 a.m. on Monday mornings. Like, there's no way I could do this. I get there one time and I'm like, this is the best thing I've ever done in my life. Now I'm friends with like two guys who start doing this on Sundays. Each week, we're all standing next to the same group of guys. And so that group goes from 3 to 6 pretty quickly. And then there's another group of guys who are like 8 of them. That goes to 14. And then it just grew and grew and grew. In that period, there started to be like girls that we'd hang out with as well. Kind of in and out here and there. And then this one group of friends we had a house like in South Boston. And we met a bunch of girls that came over one night there, and my current wife was like in that group, but like I didn't even really talk to her that night. Time just kind of goes on. Our friends who had that house, we as their lease ended, they moved into what is, used to be pretty well known as the Southie Pool House. It was a 10 bedroom single house that had an indoor pool with like a 2-floor ceiling and a deck that goes over it. So for a 4-season like town or city, having an indoor pool, like full size, shallow end, deep end was nuts. And like, just a great way to throw a party. So we basically had a better fraternity house than we ever, any of us ever had in college.
And you all had all money. Of a sudden.
Oh yeah. We all had working money. So we're all guys working 68 hours a week and we're all like, want to blow off steam, but also have disposable income now. Like, we were hiring bouncers for house parties. Like, we had like NBA players show up there. We had Loud Luxury DJ there before too. And like just a bunch of names and stuff. And so our group just keeps growing through this. My wife was actually seeing one of my friends at the time for like a few months. They weren't like serious or whatever. And at that house, we threw a Mardi Gras party. It was like this famous Mardi Gras party I stole from like when I used to throw it in college, where like the winner, the girl who gets the most beads around her neck, would get like $150 Victoria's Secret gift card. Now, the funny part about that in college was like I would never buy the gift card with the social budget because they wouldn't let me. So no one would get it. But in as adults, we actually gave out a gift card. Her and one of our other friends were like competing for it. The night kind of just keeps going the way it goes. I go home separately. I think we like Snapchat messaged about like Bagel Bites or something at like 4:30 in the morning. Hung out that night. And then it kind of was just like, this was February of 2018. Slow build from there. Kind of a lot of stuff that you would hate to hear, because I know some of your like favorite quotes that I had so far is like, look, if you go on dates, you're dating. And I'm like, I say that to my friends all the time.
Yeah.
My rule in college was like,
yeah,
not that scary. I'm like, the moment you get mad if they hook up with someone else, you're dating. That's like what I was like, that was where I drew the line. But me and my wife, like, it was a slow roll. So February, they were both kind of like probably talking to some other people through those first few months. And then like we start to see each other more and more frequently through March, April. Mm-hmm. And then May hits, and in Boston, like Figawi weekend or Memorial Day weekend, where you go to Nantucket, is like a big weekend. And we were all the right age for it. Like 60 of us go down that weekend. That weekend, we were like finally decided to go exclusive. So this is now end of May, starting in February. So 4 months in.
Okay. Yeah.
Now we're like exclusive. And then I still like, I was violating all your rules here. I was like, we're still not dating though. Like, it's just.
Well, I mean, how old that would have been, like what? Like you were probably 26, 25?
I was 26, turning 27 that year.
I feel like that's a different age than like 32 and 26 are very different ages.
Oh, yeah. And she was like, she was as much of a bro about it as I was, maybe even more. Like, she was like, yeah, we're not. This is just exclusive. But like, we just kept like, we're just doing those things you do in your 20s where you're just like lying about numbers. I think it might have been Annabelle on your podcast who said it well, which I never thought about it this way. But I think the reason people hesitate to say they were dating is because they don't want that like let down for their family, because it is a new barrier. We're like, oh, you were dating this person, so that's now an ex. Whereas if you just stop at the exclusive or talking point, you don't have exes. You're like, no, I was talking to that person. It could be 10 people, but I only have one ex.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I think that's a good reason why people avoid it. And my view from like growing up was like, I'm not going to date someone unless I know I'm going to marry them. And from early on with her, I was like, I would date her. Like, that's very obvious, and she checks the boxes. So aside from my fifth grade girlfriend, she was my first girlfriend. Like,
nice.
My fifth grade one probably doesn't really count, but aww, it was like 8 months of joy for 10-year-olds.
Nice. Well, that's very sweet. When would you say things got serious?
August of that year, we got into like an argument drinking on like a Sunday. Mm. And like the way she got out of the argument was so funny. She just looked at me and she goes, I love you. And I was like,
oh,
I don't even know what we were arguing about. And I was like, what the fuck? I was like, wait a second. Okay, I guess neither of us are mad now. Like, she was the one who was mad for nothing. I don't know what it was, but she kind of recognized it real quick. And like, we immediately like, we're like, yeah, yeah, that's, yeah, I love you too. Yeah. Like, that's it. So like, that was the moment I remember that day distinctly. But it was very much like the casual, like slow roll. Like both mm-hmm. of us play, I'm gonna say defensive, but we're both like hesitant about like jumping into mm-hmm. things quickly. Mm-hmm. So very slow from like February through May through August, but just continually getting more and more serious. And by like August, it was like, okay, we're clearly dating at this point. That was August of 2018. She's applying to med school. And like, to me, I'm like, oh, that's a little like nerve wracking because I don't know where she's going to get in. And like, I can't leave my job or whatever. She gets into Albany Med School. This is like, she would be starting during fall of 2021 mm-hmm. or fall of 2020. And February of that year, we go to Miami and like, I'm like, okay, this is great. Everything's going pretty well. And then the pandemic hits and I was like, oh shit, this is weird. Like we just get to hang out now. So like for a few months, we were like all remote from work and we basically lived together during that time. And that's when it really took the next leap. It actually probably would have forked the other way had that not happened. As in like, if she goes to med school 150 miles away and we're both working really busy, like we might've not had that chance to like live together for a little bit and see what like living together would be until she's done with med school. Mm-hmm. So the pandemic was really lucky. We got that test up until this year. It was the most we lived together. So from, what was that? Like March of that year through July when she goes to med school, we just lived together the entire time. And that was when I was like, this is it. Like, we just, like, now that we've done this part, the hard part, we already know it's possible or it's going to go through the next step. We just have to get through med school. And med school was great the first years. It's really hard for them, but they were really remote those 2 years. So when she regularly wouldn't be able to come to Boston and it'd be hard for me to see her, it was actually pretty easy to hang out. Like, it's usually hard to do any kind of distance with med students. And then by that point, you're like 4 years in. And even when it got difficult because her like job was getting harder, my social media side was allowing me to be more flexible. So I would just go there more frequently. And we just kind of make it work. But you're so serious at that point that like, even if it was a busy month and you couldn't see each other as much, it's like, yeah, we've been seeing each other long enough to know we can handle this. So the pandemic hit us at a pretty like critical time that really like accelerated us to knowing this was going to work out. On the flip side, a lot of people broke up because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
From probably the same reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. Sped up some and ended some, I'd say.
Yeah. That was what I noticed. I was like, you kind of found out within a month or two if that was going to happen or not. But yeah, it was like, there's not a single moment where I was like, hey, like this is going to be like, this is when I know. It was a lot of small moments where you're like, oh, like that's going to be my wife. And like, it's as soon as 6 months in to like 12 months in, dozens of little tiny moments where like she does something adorable or says something. You're like, oh, nice. Like this could be the one, as opposed to like one pivotal moment where like the clouds went away and I'm like, oh, this is it. Like, no, there's dozens of those and they all built up and each one was better than the last. But the pandemic was definitely a good positive accelerant for us to know that we could make it through med school and land where we are today.
Awesome. No, that's, and yeah. And at what point would you say, because everyone always says like, when you know, like at what point did you know? And what's the proposal story?
I mean, like I said, my view was I'm not going to date unless I could marry the girl. So whenever I figured that out early on, I was like, I wouldn't go this next step if I didn't know already. The proposal part is more like, this is not as romantic as it could be. I knew I was going to propose like pretty early on. It's more about timing and when. And like, I was furloughed from work during the pandemic. So like spending money, a bunch of stuff didn't feel right. But then all of a sudden, not only am I back to work, I now have more income through the online side as well. Mm-hmm. But then she also has like a pretty specific time on when she could actually have a wedding and that kind of stuff. So there was some things that we had to like formulate around. And I was probably taking longer than I needed to get an engagement ring. So this is probably the fall of, what is that, 2022 now? I knew I was going to do it earlier than this, but I just hadn't done anything yet. And then around like February of 23, I was like, we just chatted. I was like, let's go engagement ring shopping. Me and her are very transparent. So like, there was no way I was going to buy a ring and like not know what she wanted. Mm-hmm. And I think most guys should not do that anyways. It's not something you want to go wrong on. And we were like chill about talking about it. I was like, let's go ring shopping. Let's try some things on. Let's figure out what you like. We did that in February. I figure out what she likes. I buy the ring in March. And I was like, I don't really have a good plan as to how I'm going to do this yet. So I text her parents. And her parents were so helpful on this. But her dad's birthday is early May. I think May 5th, May 6th. And they always do like a big birthday party at their house down on the Cape for this. I was like, oh, if you're cool with it, like I would love to do it that weekend under the guise that she's going down there for her dad's birthday, not for an engagement. So they helped me formulate this like literally picturesque like surprise plan that you couldn't ask for. That weekend is going to be the first weekend. They take their boat out for the summer and we're going to take it over to the vineyard. And it's the usual stuff. She's so used to this stuff. So no flags coming up. And the idea was like, I proposed to her on Martha's Vineyard when she's not expecting it.
Oh.
And then when we go back to the house, instead of it just being a birthday party for her dad, all her friends are there, all my friends there, her twin brother from California is there, her younger brother's there, my parents are there, like all the people you'd want in your engagement party. And I'm like, basically 10 days of just
big party, like
big party
continued. Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not going to be able to surprise her with the fact that we're getting engaged, but what I can surprise her with is when we do it and how we do it, and like who's going to be there. And so many things could have gone wrong. Like,
yeah, how did everyone, that's a lot of people to hide.
So
like,
yeah.
Where'd they park?
Location stuff, like all that kind of, and the worst part about it is May in Boston, like you're not going to get good weather.
No.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at the weather 10 days out, and it's like, it says 44 degrees and rainy. I'm like, it's gonna be really hard for her dad to sell us that we're going to the vineyard for the first time of the year when it's 44 and rainy. Like, makes no sense. Now, as the week goes on, I'm telling all my clients about it, and we're all checking the weather together. My clients were being so supportive and so fun about this. The weather starts to look good, and it being 70 degrees and sunny out of nowhere, I'm like, fuck, we got one like box checked off. We can go to the vineyard. I have no backup plan if it rains at all. We go there. The proposal works. She's surprised. Everything's good. And there's another surprise left, which is everyone being back at the house. So like, I'm supposed to be relaxed at brunch at the Black Dog Tavern in the vineyard. And I'm still like visibly stressed because I'm texting everyone. I'm like, all right, everyone, like, make sure you're in the right spot. I'll let you know when we're 10 minutes away. So everyone gets to the dock, everyone's playing music and stuff. And she can probably tell, but she's so excited about this that like, she's not noticing that I'm acting this way, but I was definitely being weird. And she was about to FaceTime her friends to tell them she got engaged. And we're like, whoa, that was what we really hoped she wouldn't do. Mm-hmm. Because if she FaceTimes them, they're in a car and they don't have a good answer as to why she's going to pick up on it. One of them, genius friend of hers, brought like Kentucky Derby gear in the car
That's so funny.
And they're like, oh, we're on an Uber to Kentucky Derby party because it was the same weekend as the Kentucky Derby. And I was like, thank God. Allie was like, you know what? I don't want to FaceTime anyone until we get home. And I was like, huh, that's great. All right. So we start going back. And it's like a nice slow back. Everything's going well. And for some reason, she logs into Snapchat. And one of her family friends, who would be at her dad's birthday party anyways, was on the Snap map right there. And she sees it. And she looks at me. She's like, there's going to be more people at the house than I thought, isn't there? And I was like, why? And she's like, oh, like I, my friend Allie Skelly, she's on Snap map. And I was told she wasn't going to be there. I'm like, well, yeah, but she would always be at this party.
Yeah.
So I kind of like played it off cool. But she started to get a little bit of a hint. But then we pull up to the dock and there's just like 100 people there.
Nice.
We get out onto the top of the boat and like look over. And each person, she's just like, oh my God, this person came. And the final one she saw was her twin brother all the way from California here. And like tears and all that kind of stuff. Sun is shining. It's like Kygo playing. All this kind of stuff. It was just like beautiful moment that like, everything worked out basically as good as planned. And I was like, I just could not have nailed it any better with luck for the most part. And her parents helped out a ton, but so many things could have gone wrong. And outside of that, like sneaking suspicion she got on Snapchat for a second, like she was still surprised in the end. Her only complaint was she was like, I wasn't like dressed great for the proposal shots. And I was like, look, you have one of two choices. Mm-hmm. Either you're surprised or you're dressed right. Not both. And she's like, yeah, you're right. I'll take the surprise over being dressed like perfectly for it. So our proposal photos are just kind of funny. But
I love that. And I feel like when things aren't like totally perfect, that's like the best thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's like the most like human thing you can do. And it sounds really beautiful. And
it's
then
beautiful, yeah.
You're married.
Yep.
I feel like, so we've got two successful people and it sounds like you guys kind of think very similarly. Like you're very, you know, like I think it sounds like very logical.
Yeah.
You work hard. What's kind of the power couple? Is it like a power couple dynamic or?
So, I mean, her friends would like to say that and I would like my friends to say that, but we are, I guess, like it doesn't feel that way. Like she feels like the harder worker between the two of us, her job's just a lot more serious than mine is. Like we joke that like she's saving lives all day and I'm just making like wealthy people marginally more attractive. And I'm like, not exactly the same level of stress day to day, but it's cool. Like, I mean, I think, how hard she works has helped me a lot. I was not always a hard worker. And being with someone like that, especially when she's going through med school and stuff, like instead of me responding the way I would have in my 20s, like just going out and drinking with my friends while she's studying, I'm like, this is a chance to do more work, catch up on stuff, build something else. So I feed a lot off her hard work more than the other way around. But yeah, she's a very hard worker, which helps because then we're both tired at the end of the week and we both feel the same about doing stuff. We both want to blow off steam and hang out with friends, or we both want to like sit down and just like watch like Harry Potter or some shit and fall asleep. Like it's a nice balance overall, but definitely fun to have someone on the other side that's like kind of pushing you without deliberately pushing you.
Totally. And I feel like it would be very helpful to be married to a doctor just in general.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I can get whatever. I can't yet, but I can get whatever I want if I need to.
Totally. Yeah. And, have you ever, this is going to be the most dumb, not a doctor question. Have you guys ever been on like a plane or somewhere else and someone's like, is there a doctor on board? And she's like, had to respond to it.
Not yet. I mean, I'm hoping just to be there for.
Apparently it will soon enough if the doctor says that.
Like her dad's gone through that multiple times. Mm-hmm. And usually there's a handful of them on there. I guess there's some nuances. Like once a physician takes over care, mm-hmm. like in public, like that, they have to stay with them or whatever. I don't know how that stuff works, but I will be so excited the moment that happens. And I'm going to yell on behalf of her. I'm gonna be like, yeah, literally right here. And she's
going
to be so mad at me, but I'm like, yes, yes, mm-hmm. right now. She's going to do whatever we need. But unfortunately, not yet. She's had a doctor title since May of this year. And since mm-hmm. then, we've only flown together once. Mm-hmm. So for our honeymoon. And then we'll do some more trips, and hopefully during that time, not hopefully something goes wrong, but just enough where we get to whip out that card, maybe get some free champagne out of it.
Oh, for
celebrate
sure.
Celebrate on the flight.
Gotta love it. No, yeah. that's fantastic. Congratulations again.
Thank you.
Yeah, so mailbag subject, dating after some serious weight loss. Hi, Charlotte and any guests. Wondering if I, 31 female, could get your take on something I've been experiencing after starting to date again. In the last 18 months, I've lost over 65 pounds. Congrats. It's been a tough journey that I'm super proud of. It took a lot of discipline. To get to this point, I worked with a personal trainer and a dietitian. All weight loss was natural. I'm continuing to maintain those habits with the intent to do so the rest of my life. I also want to stress I didn't just do this for aesthetics. I really want to make better lifestyle choices after losing a family member to heart disease. Most of my family members are overweight, and I've been overweight, if not obese, my entire life. It was time to break the cycle. Well, while I consider this an accomplishment, it's brought a new issue to my dating life that has me feeling a bit insecure. I definitely notice an uptick in dating app matches and quality of matches, which is great. But within the first date or two, my recent weight loss inevitably becomes a topic of conversation. It's also not hard to find photos of me at my previous weight if you scroll back far enough on my socials. While I'm comfortable telling that story, that's not so much the issue as much as their reaction to it. Whenever I share my story, particularly specifics like previous weight, amount lost, or family member habits, with the men I date, I get the sense they view my fitness transformation as something temporary and fear the possibility of me gaining back the weight, which they wouldn't be attracted to. They never say this aloud, but based on the tone, condescending comments, intrusive questions, and hyperfixation by multiple men, I don't think I'm off base in my assessment. Some examples. Asks if I've ever lost weight in the past and gained it back and why things didn't work. Asks about other medical history, medication use, surgery, not just weight loss specific, but in general. I've been asked if my family has history of mental illness, what medications I've been on. Comments like, it might be easy to maintain things now, but what about after you have kids? Or what if you get depressed? Would that take you back to old habits? Rude comments about my family, expressing surprise when I say we're still very close, saying parents who allow kids to be overweight are abusive, or saying I'm encouraging their bad habits by visiting them and not policing what they eat or giving them an ultimatum to get to the gym to maintain a relationship with them. Also, there's just a lot of are you sure type questions, basically repeating a reworded version of the question that I've already answered. I guess my question is there a way to answer these questions in a way that's accepted the first time that shuts down the continued probing? I don't mind one question or curiosity in a way that's positive, but the constant follow-up makes me wonder if there's a better answer out there that gives all this information without the extras. Any tips on a talk track? Also, am I off base in thinking these are just not appropriate questions, or should I continue to expect this? Also, not sure if it's important. The men I've been interested in are generally more active. I've enjoyed getting into fitness, and I'd like to date a man who also likes to go to the gym, but they don't have a career in fitness or anything, nor are they competing as far as I know. Generally just your active average active guy, gym bro light at most.
The fuck? I mean, yeah, first question or first answer, there's like four ways to answer this. The first issue is, yeah, these questions are crazy from the guys. It's not just like, hey, like, what did you do this? The follow-ups and the lead-ups are like, it's almost like the dark part of your brain that asks you the questions when you're going through a phase like that. You're like, am I going to be able to keep this up? Like, what happens if I go up and go back down? But these guys are just okay asking her. So I guess the first thing I'd say is the best answer is just find better guys. Like, they shouldn't be asking this. Second answer I'd have is, like, I think one positive side effect of these, like, new drugs, you know, even though I know she's natural, but it could have a positive side effect on people who naturally lose it, is, like, it's going to be a lot more common for people to lose weight and keep it off. So that should kind of, like, numb the idea that, like, oh, you've lost weight, we'll be able to keep it off. That's going to take years or so, but hopefully that's a positive side effect of those, where people stop looking at that as temporary. But one of the things I'd definitely highlight is, like, the fact that she mentioned that she got into this not just for aesthetics, for health reasons, and from a data perspective, that tends to mean better long-term adherence to this kind of stuff. And also, like, what do these guys want? Like, do they want, like, when someone's overweight, they're like, oh, why don't they get in shape? And they get in shape and they're like, well, are you going to stay in shape? And it's like, well, yeah. I mean, clearly, if she, especially if you did it naturally, like, she did all the right things. Like, what more could you ask for? The guys just, like, always just try and find something that's, like, gets them to be the way they are. But in terms of, like, talk tracks to say back, I mean, I like honesty in general. And clearly the honest answer here is, like, you made a major lifestyle choice based on family history stuff, which is one of the better reasons for people to actually make a permanent change. Whereas if someone's like, I lost, you know, 65 pounds because I got into a marathon that I'm only going to do once, or like there's a beach trip I had coming up, or a wedding. Like, those are all kind of temporary one-time events, but they're not like mortality related reasons and performance related reasons. Those reasons are a lot stronger, but you could just leverage the idea of like, look, like, is something just clicked? Like, I, like, there's something that happened in my family that I was like, you know what? Like, I want to feel better all the time. It's more about performance for me. Like, I notice how I feel at work, and I don't just do it because like, it's like a fad or whatever. But leveraging the fact that you had a, like, some honest truth to it, you had a key pivotal moment and you're doing it for like fundamentally the right reasons, would be the main answer, I'd say. And if they can't understand that, I mean, just go date another guy and just keep going until you find someone who does, because these follow-up questions are absurd. And at some point, the best answer to them is like finding a different person more than having a good talk track for it. But kudos to you for doing 65 pounds naturally on your own, working with a trainer and dietitian. That is fantastic and difficult work, but she's in it for the right reasons. I think any of the right guys would be able to see that. And, they could bond over it and do things together. But it's just the most mind-blowing part about that question is the follow-up questions these guys are asking. Yeah,
and I almost thought, because I almost think somebody that's more invested in fitness, like, in, as a lifestyle, would be way more respectful and just more excited about that story than, you know, the guy that maybe is, you know, they just want to know that the girl's not going to be fat. Like, there's some guys that are just kind of like obsessed with that. And I don't think it's the guys that are really interested in the fitness and the health aspect of it. You know, where it's like, they want to be eating right. They want to, you know, live a long, healthy life. Like, I think like that type of guy would be a way better person to date than, you know, the guy that maybe doesn't understand fitness, who's just obsessed with the looks.
Couldn't agree more. I'm like, they should understand it better than anyone else. And like, we like moralize and analyze like the body composition side a little too much, but these kind of shifts happen in people's lives for other things all the time. Like, as I mentioned earlier, like, I was not a productive hard worker for the majority of my life. That was a flip that happened at like 26, 27, in part from the clients I worked with. It was more gradual than sudden, but like, now objectively, the hours I put in are stuff that I would never imagine doing before. But no guy's going to question that. They're going to be like, well, what happens when you gain weight or whatever? Like, I'm allowed to make that switch with no follow-up questions. You're like, oh, something clearly clicked. Why can't that also happen on the body weight side? Like, something just clicked and like, they're now going to do it. And if they did the hardest thing ever, which is doing it naturally in that amount of weight, in all likelihood, they're more prone to keeping it off than anyone else is, because they learned how to do it the hardest way possible. It is just weird. You'd think that that would be the group that'd be most excited about it. And like, I don't know. There's just classic dudes. Just very classic.
Just dudes being assholes. And I also think too, like, just you can also be turned off by like a way someone like socializes with you and asks you questions. Like, if someone asks an intrusive question, it's not just like you just have to, you can like say, you know, that's a weird question, or like they say something like mental illness, or like they try to probe about family. Like, that would be something that would bug me, is like
the family, you know, stuff was crazy.
Yeah, like if someone said something like that to me, it would be like, you know, that's a weird question. Like, how does that relate to this at all? And then kind of force them to spell out that they've got this, you know, unconscious bias of sorts, which I really think, like, once that happens, like the date, you know, wrap, like, end that date. Like,
yeah, it's going south from there.
But I think if it can, you know, kind of, if you get a weird question, like, you know, flinching and just being like, that's a fucking weird, interesting question.
Basically, red flags is what I'd say. Like, those are the kind of guys who, like, I can already imagine their social media feed. It's just like, the shirtless, roided out guys mm-hmm. who only eat butter now and yell about seed oils. I'm like, those are the kind of people who'd have these follow-up questions for women that are like questioning their family for allowing their kids to be overweight and stuff. And I'm like, I know the type of guy that is. I'm like, you just mm-hmm. don't want to find those. Like, yeah. if they're not empathetic towards that, like, or understand that there's environmental challenges and socioeconomic challenges. And also a lot of this stuff mm-hmm. is just new generationally. Like mm-hmm. this hasn't been a problem for more than 40, 50 years. In the entire world. So like it takes time for families to adjust, for parents to adjust when their parents were taught, hey, we just need to have food on the table and you need to eat what you have in front of you. Mm-hmm. It takes a while for that generation after that to be like, hey, we actually have food, like more than enough food now. Mm-hmm. I didn't have that growing up. I don't know how to teach you to not have like excess, right? Mm-hmm. And the idea that they just moralize it and they're like, oh, like your family's bad for allowing you to be this way. I'm like, literally through all of human history, the biggest challenge we've ever had is having enough food. So yeah. like, no, evolutionarily, through culture, through everything, like that's actually still the more normal thing to do is allow your kids to eat. And mm-hmm. that's not a moralized issue. This is just a modern problem that we have. And these dudes are just like, hey, I stayed fit or whatever, so why can't you? And I'm like, think about all the reasons why you are and like mm-hmm. why you were from being a kid and analyze it a little bit more like empathetically and be like, oh yeah, not everyone had what I had growing up. Like, or the genetics that I have or whatever, and mm-hmm. understand the person in front of you more. But, and for her, I'm like, these are just red flag questions. Like yeah. some of them, if someone asks one question about it one time and it's a lot more like bare bones, they're like, mm-hmm. congrats, that's awesome, fine. But any of these follow-ups, I'm like, no, just yeah. get out of there. Make sure they pay for the bill and leave that date immediately.
Yeah, it's intrusive and rude. And I thought that too. You have a public Instagram profile. You've got a lot of followers. Same goes for TikTok. Do you ever get weirdos in your DMs?
Oh, one time. Yeah, it was one time. I mean, I'd probably get more, but like, I also am so bad with DMs. Like, I think mm-hmm. I have like 8 weeks of DMs piled up and I just binge through them. But mm-hmm. I just don't check them enough to see all the ones. But there was a distinct day where, yeah, there was one that I saw guy who sent a video that I did never want to see again. And I immediately, like, it just kind of ruined my entire Wednesday. And I was like, this only happened to me once. And I know girls go through that a lot more. And it gives you just enough empathy to be like, yeah, I get how they feel shitty around or like unsafe around people or whatever it is. I'm like, I felt so distraught for just like 12 hours in one day that I'm like, yeah, if this happened to me regularly, I'd be freaked out. I'd probably stop doing what I do. Like,
oh, for sure. And we have a listener who's got that sort of issue. She basically just says, Instagram I use for business is plagued by potential suitors. Hey, could use some advice on something super annoying I've been experiencing since I, female 29, began a full-time career in real estate after getting my license last year. The issue is mainly Instagram, as one of my mentors suggested using it as a way to grow an audience who could become potential clients. I chose to just build upon my existing Instagram as I had a few thousand followers, didn't want to start over. I'll mostly make posts about new listings, as well as generic videos about home buying tips, market trends, that sort of thing, with a little bit of personal stuff in between. But in the way that's safe for work. For the most part, this has worked well. However, there's a double-edged sword. I've had multiple men reach out via DM in hopes of a date or some other romantic connection. Annoyingly, they always reach out under the guise of being interested in buying or selling a home. In a lot of cases, it's basically just a glorified pickup line stating their true intention after I've responded asking how I can help, which is easy to just laugh off without much of an issue. However, there are multiple situations where a guy has kept up the act for a few weeks where I've gotten to the point of speaking to them on the phone, met them for coffee, or looked at a few listings. At that point, there's usually a bit of vetting pre-qualification that prevents any truly creepy interactions, like situations where we'd be alone together touring empty houses, but it's still infuriating nonetheless and a big waste of time that could be spent with serious buyers. It also puts me in an uncomfortable position. I try to be friendly to anyone who could be a potential buyer even someday, and my reputation's important, and rejecting people just sort of forces me to break from that. Is there anything you'd recommend doing that could potentially stop these suitors a bit earlier in the process, before I've spent so much time with them, preferably in a way where I can still seem fun and friendly that won't be off-putting to potential serious buyers?
Oh yeah, hard launch a boyfriend or husband, just right on socials. That might help. But knowing guys, to be honest, like after that incident with me, like I had kept my girlfriend at the time, now wife, like a little bit quiet in the background. I wasn't like hiding it, but I was like, I don't want to expose her or whatever. I told her like literally that next day, I was like, you're going on my social media now. And it obviously helped for that reason. But I just do think the guys are a little bit more persistent when they see that anyways. It sounds like she's a buyer's agent. Make them give her like a $10,000 deposit to meet up ever, or just chat. Be like, hey, I need to know that you're serious about this. put money on the table. I don't know if that's allowed. And I used to be a real estate agent, but like that would be one way to filter them a little better. Otherwise, like there's this double-edged sword of like, yeah, you want to grow your page and grow your business. And that is unfortunately a useful way to grow. Even if it's not something that's business-wise for you, it can still expand your reach. Filtering better, I think one thing that she's already learning based on the way the question's asked is like you get used to seeing patterns like and going through these annoying experiences are going to make her the best at filtering this better than I could ever be. She's going to be able to see the signs earlier and earlier and earlier. Like the years I did do real estate, you could tell after my third summer of doing it, like on the phone, if somebody was going to be one of those people who you have to do 3 days of 8 showings with to do a rental, or you give 3 showings that day and they're going to sign that day. And you can kind of get a vibe for that on the phone. So I feel like the best like answer for her is the more she has to go through this, unfortunately, the better she'll be at filtering it than I could ever be. But I mean, in terms of immediate actions, some degree of like filtration through filling out forms that just basically add layers to either like price points or whatever to be able to set up a meeting where they have to be a little bit more serious and be like, okay, for us to ever chat in person, it's like $200 or something like that. And it's her time that's being wasted. I think that's fair. And now some of those guys are still going to pay for that and meet up with her and still be creepy about it after, but you at least filter that down. Or hiring or partnering with someone that's on the men's side or female side, but just two of you, where either you have an assistant that like deals with this stuff for you so that they're directly talking to man and the man has to be a little bit more like persistent to get through that, or having a partner that you do the real estate stuff with, where if you're doing the social media side, guess what? If they want to be serious about it, they go to your partner. You guys split commissions, but then you guys split the work as well. From my experience in real estate, that'd be the best like ways to filter right now, but it's just an annoying part of the industry that doesn't, at least in my experience, the guy side's way easier. I can just say I have a wife and show her once or twice and basically nothing ever happens again. I know men, you could hard launch a husband, which is still a good idea, but you're still going to get like 20% of them who are like, I'll be better than him. Like some shit like that. And you're like, they're just bad guys out there.
Totally.
I think you're just going to have your like eyes open. You're going to be better at filtering it than anyone else will soon. Just, like you said, you can put dollar values on it, like be able to meet up so you're not wasting your time. You can put forms in the way and you can put people in the way as well, but you're also still just gonna have to pick up on the pattern of like when someone's coming at you for the wrong reasons. And it's just an unfortunate part of growing a business socially and being exposed visually. But on the flip side, you get the positive benefit of growing your business. And hopefully you can just make sure all the people that are reaching out to you are going for those reasons. But we have female trainers at my gym at Equinox that were getting people legitimately buying training packages, even though they had no intention of ever having them as their trainer. They're just like, I'll spend $2,500 on this just to have an hour with her twice a week. And I'm like, there's guys who still go that far.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they're just impossible to avoid. And when you're young and in business, like you got to take the training sessions. So like, I would love to say it is a good answer. That's perfect. But you just have to build up experience, build up filters that you'll know off the bat better than I could teach anyone there. It's just very annoying that you have to deal with that. Like, I just feel for you. It sucks.
Yeah. No, I think it's a win some, you lose some. I do like the form idea just because that kind of thing would be very simple to a person that's a serious buyer. Like if you just have, are you pre-qualified? Who are you pre-qualified through? And they just have to name the bank. And like, I think people that are just kind of, you know, don't just take, hey, I'm thinking of buying a house, can you help, like in an Instagram DM, say, okay, cool, fill out this form. And then I think, I don't know, just being forced to write down the name of a bank, I think would scare enough people off, or just like, oh, shit.
That's a fantastic idea.
This is serious. And then it also just doesn't say like, you know, maybe someone would be like, oh, you know, I can't do a $200 thing. That would be like a serious buyer. I think that would be super like helpful. You know, I like that idea a lot.
If you layer, depending on what kind of market she's in, if you layer a form on top of like, hey, it's a deposit, we'll give it back to you, but to meet, it's X amount of dollars, just so that they have to go through that. Again, you'll get one or two guys who will still do all this, but it'll bring the number down dramatically. Like we have a form for filling out, for setting up phone calls for me for coaching. And it's a genuine form. It's like a real form I want them to answer, and it gives me information. But at the same time, it also works as a filter. And we've adjusted the form to make sure we're not getting people who just like want to chat for no reason and have no intention of doing coaching. It's not a good use of their time, not a good use of my time. And the more you can be better about filtering that, like the better it works out. And you also, for her, if she does it right, it should help you on the client side. It should help you be a lot more efficient with those processes. And that would be probably the best, most immediate approach for it.
No, it's a fantastic idea. No, you've been super helpful with these two questions. I got two. I had two complex questions that I feel like were a little bit outside my sister and my scope, and it was great to have you.
Thank you.
You were a fantastic guest.
Thank you for bringing me here. This is awesome.
Yeah. Any parting words before we wrap things up?
Oh, yeah. probably the best advice I ever got. And it was also good because I got it from someone who's in a position where it means a lot more. And I can't, like, my client privacy is very big, but picture like kind of the upper echelon of people out there, like socioeconomically, power-wise, and whatever. And when this kind of person who's in the most serious type of role and knows the most serious type of people tells you this, like, you take it seriously. So one piece of advice, like, it was winter 2022, was, as he said, it was just rule number six, but rule number six from this book is just don't take yourself too seriously. Mm-hmm. When that comes from that kind of person's mouth, like president level type of like influence, so you're like, okay, I need to remember to never take anything too seriously because this guy does things that are way more serious than I do. So for everyone, no matter what your job is, no matter what your dating style is, or no matter what's going on, just like remember always, like, we're here once, don't take things too seriously.
Yeah, no one ever gets out of life alive anyway.
No matter what. That's like the fitness mantra. It's like, we're all going to die anyways, so I'm going to drink in the meantime.
Exactly. Sometimes. No, I love that. And tell us one more time where we can find you.
So on Instagram and TikTok, Vices Fitness, so V-I-C-E-S, then fitness, no underscore, nothing. And then same thing on YouTube, and then I have a website as well, vicesfitness.com.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Adine. You are a fantastic guest. I really appreciate you coming out here today, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your time in Austin.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I'll talk to you guys later.